Together, WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. The man who killed Heather Heyer and injured dozens of others in Charlottesville will appeal his convictions. An estimated 4,000 community college students could get their tuitions fully covered under a plan from Governor Northam. And a regional network in our area wants to resurrect Virginia's grain economy. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, December 13th. The man who killed Heather Heyer and injured dozens of others in a car attack on peaceful protesters in Charlottesville will appeal his convictions. The Daily Progress, citing online court records, reports that a lawyer for James Alex Fields Jr. filed a notice of appeal on Monday. Last December, Fields was convicted of first-degree murder in the killing of Heyer and multiple charges for injuries caused to others in the car attack. He was sentenced to life in prison plus 419 years. Fields, from Ohio, already is serving multiple life sentences after accepting a plea agreement in a separate federal hate crimes case. The state sentence is to run consecutively to his federal sentence. The Unite the Right rally on August 12, 2017, drew hundreds of white supremacists to Charlottesville to protest the planned removal of a statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee. Fields, an avowed white supremacist, admitted deliberately driving his car into counter-protesters who showed up to demonstrate. An estimated 4,000 community college students could get their tuitions fully covered under a plan proposed Thursday by Governor Ralph Northam. The governor is calling for the state to set aside $145 million to help students studying skills that are in demand.
Biotechnology, artificial intelligence, data collection, data analysis, those are the jobs of the 21st century.
Northam says there's a gap between the jobs that are open and the skills that students have, and he says community colleges can help fix that.
I'm here to tell you today there are thousands of jobs out there, and they don't necessarily require a four-year college education.
Northam's so-called G3 plan targets low and moderate income students who study in-demand skills in areas such as cybersecurity and healthcare. The state would cover the cost of tuition, fees, and books, and students could also qualify for up to $1,000 a semester in grants to help with transportation and child care. They would have to maintain a certain minimum GPA and complete a community service or work requirement. The General Assembly will begin hashing out the budget when they meet again in January. Virginia could slowly be making its way toward legalizing marijuana. This week, state officials, lawmakers, and advocates gathered in the state capitol for a cannabis summit to find a path forward. WAMU's Martin Ostermuhl reports from Richmond.
Attorney General Mark Herring convened the summit only weeks after Democrats claimed victory in November's elections, giving them control over the General Assembly for the first time in a generation.
I don't believe our current system of criminalizing possession of marijuana is working at all. And there is a better, smarter approach to cannabis.
During the day-long summit, Herring and a handful of lawmakers heard from experts and state officials from Colorado and Illinois, two of the 11 states that have fully legalized marijuana. But despite the more favorable political climate, most state officials at the summit said legalization could still be a few years off. Senator Adam Eben represents Alexandria and Arlington County.
This is a complicated subject with a lot more moving parts than one might anticipate, and I'm glad that we can ease our way towards regulation. I hope to start with decriminalization.
Lawmakers also want to expunge records of nonviolent offenders and focus on racial diversity and equity. Neil Franklin is a former police officer and current director of the Law Enforcement Action Partnership.
We have to address that as we move forward so that we don't end up with white males making all the money from the change in the industry.
The legislative session in Richmond kicks off next month. I'm Martin Ostermuhl.
National parks in the U.S. are losing native species at an alarming rate. The National Park Service is asking for help to combat the growing problem. Virginia Public Radio's Robbie Harris reports.
America's national parks have been a haven for animals and people for hundreds of years, but things are changing more rapidly than ever as invasive animal species outcompete the locals. Like proliferating pythons in Everglades National Park, invasive animals gain a foothold quickly if they're not stopped in their tracks.
Causing loss of park wildlife or impacting visitors' enjoyment of parks by changing recreational experiences that are possible.
Ashley Dyer teaches wildlife conservation at Virginia Tech. She's serving on the panel to look for solutions. Dyer's done a lot of work with citizen scientists, everyday people who volunteer to help.
Citizen science and community science are a really important part of the solution here. So quite a few parks have what are called bio blitzes, where folks get together and they spend a day or a whole weekend assessing all of the species that they can find within the park.
And with 84 million acres of national parks in this country and nowhere near enough staff biologists to handle it all, that help from citizens would be huge. I'm Robbie Harris.
Finally today, a regional network in our area has a humble goal to resurrect Virginia's grain economy from the wheat in our soil to the bread on your table. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee reports.
The Common Grain Alliance is a nonprofit organization comprised of more than 40 grain growers, millers, and bakers in Virginia and the Mid-Atlantic region. A common refrain among their members is that flour, so often taken for granted as a substrate or thickening agent, should itself taste good.
Many other foods have really come into the spotlight for the local foods movement. You know, people are interested in going to the farmer's market and buying heirloom tomatoes and, you know, pasture-raised meats and eggs.
Hannah Johnson, a home baker and produce farmer from Keezeltown, is one of the co-founders of the Alliance.
I think a lot of people think of grain as this flavorless filler food that's just an ingredient that you don't taste.
She bought a secondhand tabletop mill to process flour in her own kitchen. The group is just a year and a half old. Another co-founder, Michael Grants, runs a market garden and wood-fired bakery with his spouse, Arden Jones, outside of Lynchburg. He remembers the Alliance's first few meetings in the basement of the Waynesboro Public Library.
Most of the people at the meeting had some sort of grain-related business, whether it was a small bakery or a mill or a farm, so we're all trying to figure out what the best options are for us to support each other and develop the regional grain economy.
Members now meet on a quarterly basis around Virginia. A few of them recently convened a panel at the Virginia Farm-to-Table Conference in Weir's Cave, including Daniel Austin of Taste of Jubilee Farm in Rocky Mount.
In 2019, we harvested barley. We harvested two different kinds of hard winter wheat. We harvested spring oats. We harvested open pollinated corn, number two yellow non-GMO corn, non-GMO soybeans, and buckwheat.
He too denounces commodity flour for being a tasteless powder.
Flour is everywhere in our food, almost everything we eat, and you should be aware of the flavor, not to mention the health benefits, of eating local freshly milled flour.
Austin grows grains for seed use, animal feed, and human consumption. His food-grade wheat primarily goes to Deep Roots Milling in Roanoke for processing, which is run by sixth-generation miller Charlie Wade. Wade says that almost all of his grower and buyer connections were made through the Common Grain Alliance.
Really tight-knit community, like-minded folks, you know, great to bounce ideas back and forth. Just really enjoy the community of it.
One of those buyers is the worker-owned restaurant, the Little Grill Collective in Harrisonburg. Co-owner Tim Wiggins also sat on the farm-to-table panel.
All our pancakes use Virginia grain, our biscuits and our cookies, and some of it goes into our potato cakes and our soy sausage. I think it's important to support local agriculture and local small business that are trying to do the right thing for the soil and for the environment.
While the term local has no set definition in terms of food production, Hannah Johnson hopes the Alliance can create the demand for more growers, particularly in the Shenandoah Valley.
This is my neck of the woods. I was born and raised here and would love to have some more grain farmers here and celebrate our tradition of wheat farming in the Shenandoah Valley.
Johnson laments that flours with gluten proteins, such as wheat, have lost popularity in the current foodie scene.
With large-scale agriculture as it is right now, a lot of pesticides are used, a lot of glyphosate, that's the same thing as Roundup, is sprayed on the crops. In standard agriculture practice, it's sprayed on wheat just prior to harvest. Not all wheat is like that. Farmers growing here in Virginia who are growing for the artisan market are trying to produce a high-quality product.
But Virginia in particular has another challenge for grain farmers: the humidity, which increases the risk of certain fungal infections that can essentially poison a wheat crop.
One of the main reasons that there's not a lot of local wheat and grain in Virginia to begin with is because we have a really challenging climate for growing grain. So we've been working on applying for grants to get funding to educate farmers on growing quality wheat and grain in Virginia.
Because of our climate, it's easier to grow soft than hard wheats here. Soft wheats have a lower concentration of protein and are better suited for goods such as pastries rather than breads. But some farmers are experimenting with adapting hard wheats to the region or blending harvests together to benefit from the properties of each. Michael Grants combines a few different flours for many of his loaves, which he bakes in a mobile wood-fired oven and then sells to farmers markets and on-site at the Great Day Garden.
I think if we can change the way that people think about bread and encourage people to question what's in their bread, then we're really creating a radical shift in how people think about food, not just as a commodity or as a blank slate of fuel that you're putting into your body, but as something that's alive, that's full of nutrition, and something that can really nourish you and heal you.
For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagen.
You'll find more about that story at WMRA.org and on the WMRA app. WMRA News, I'm Bob Levine. Thanks for listening and enjoy your Friday.